I also want to begin by thanking Matthew for inviting me to be here. I had hoped for a little bit of sunshine, but I'm hoping maybe we'll get that tomorrow. I think that I'm going to start with a little story from the Bible that I may have actually used in this room once before. I can't remember if I did, but the reason I'm going to start from it is because of what I actually think computer forensics is really about. In this story, there's a question about the rebuilding of the Temple of Jerusalem in the 5th century BC. Religious leaders in Jerusalem told the satrap of Darius that the previous king had promised to pay for, the previous Persian king had promised to pay for the rebuilding of the temple, and that this was, they were expecting that this would happen. So the satrap wrote to Darius and said, look, these Jewish leaders say that you're going to pay for rebuilding the temple. And Darius wrote to, told one of his assistants to go look in the archives to see if there's any documentation for this. And in Ekbatana, which is northwest of Iran, in the archive there, supposedly they turned up the evidence of this promise. And because it had been extracted from the archive, Darius and his advisors said, okay, this is authentic. We've made this promise, and we're going to keep it. And so he wrote to the satrap, and he said, yep, the last king, Cyrus, did promise to pay for the rebuilding of the temple. But guess what? Since you didn't keep your records properly, you're going to have to pay for it. So it came out of the satrap's budget as opposed to out of Darius' budget. And the point of the story is that, from my perspective, in the context of digital forensics, is that digital forensics represents failure. It represents the fact that we need to use it, represents a failure on our part to take up the ideas that Luciano Durante and I'm sorry to put his name in the same breath, David Bierman, have expressed about from the time at which we conceptualize systems for preserving information, we need to think about how we're going to keep them and ensure their longevity into the future. Digital forensics indicates that we failed to actually be able to do that. So, the thing here, though, is that it also represents the cultural heritage, the fact that we, although we have wonderful practice of appraisal, particularly in the context of public records, we often don't know what it is that's going to be significant in terms of in society's looking back at itself in the future. And archaeology is a wonderful case in point in that, where archaeologists go out and they're confronted with sites, and they will take any pieces of evidence they can find, and they will tell stories from it. I think that a really good case of this is Bill Bryson's describing in The History of Everything. He's describing an exhibition in the Smithsonian about this larger humanoid with his arm on another humanoid in a large expanse of space in probably the Rift Valley, I think it is, in Africa. And it shows the fear that's on their faces and so forth. And basically, it's reconstructed from a couple of footprints. And the story is told that basically this was open space, and there was environmental information. There were larger animals, they were afraid. So basically, the archaeologists take these stories and there's a little piece of evidence and they construct stories from it. And this is what a lot of what we want to do in cultural sector. to the point, but it's also the digital forensics that we're going to do to collect this information to tell stories. It's all about failure. But it's also about the gathering of evidence. And in all the discussions, and I have to compliment the authors on the work they've done on this paper, it is very, very, very exciting, and I think that when it's brought to conclusion, it will be really excellent contribution to our thinking. There is a massive amount of work that's been done in the legal sector in this area over many, many decades. One of the earliest ones that I think, cases that I think of is Carlucci versus Piper Aircraft, where not only did the judge make the ruling about the availability of evidence to the plaintiff by the defendant, but also a lot of work had to go into understanding that evidence to make it viable. Another case in point that allows me to come on to the planning and design of evidence collection was a legal case in which a criminal sued, sorry, made a petition stating that the evidence the federal marshal came to collect the evidence could not have known that the particular tape contained evidence of criminal activity, and therefore should not have collected it. Okay? The marshal, being cross-examined about this, said, actually, I knew that. It's true. I didn't know what was on that tape. But I knew that this person shouldn't have had that tape, because the tape actually had markings on it that showed that it had come from federal organization, in this case, Los Alamos Labs. And so the marshal said that it had been illegally obtained because these tapes are not supposed to leave the grounds of the organization, grounds of the buildings. So he was perfectly right. The thing was, though, that the reason why the criminal had argued that it shouldn't have been collected, that actually he'd been stealing the tapes from the government and putting pornographic materials on them. He hadn't been stealing government materials, he just needed the media. So, but anyway, the case in point here was that the digital forensics began at the time the evidence was collected. And here's where the UK police forces have some extremely valuable guidance on the production and collection of evidence. Very simple, very clear. Maybe Brad will talk about it a little bit. I don't know that he's going to be talking about education. Designed to protect the chain of custody of evidence. And this particular set of guidance is something that we could pick up and use when we go and collect evidence from authors and so forth, and when we are confronted with digital materials. So my interest in this actually began a long time ago when I initially thought that maybe it was e-paleography. But I got some money from the British Library and the disk to do a little report that Matthew's talked about before. And I pick up from that 2 points. One is that in that report, we focused on what can go wrong and how we can address the problems of what's gone wrong through using technology and methods to recover information. And we were asking a question about, well, what is it that the big data recovery companies are actually able to do? assuaging conversations that have been collected by a researcher who had spent some £300,000 collecting the data. It was a one-time event that it could be collected. And she was using it for a longitudinal study, and the data was lost. So we sent the machine, the server that had initially been on, we sent one of the, first we said, you know how when disasters happen, they never happen all at one time. It just happened in between the links of the vacation that the backups that they were running on weekly cycles had gone past the sixth week when they didn't, when they overwrote the original backup tape. So there was no previous backup tape. So the first thing we did was we sent the six-week backup tape that were overwritten only once to one of these companies to see whether they could get it back. Because the claim was always that you can retrieve the underwritten bits. And actually, if you look using magnetic force microscopy at the surface of disks, you can see, or magnetic tapes, you can see that the right, when the magnetic particles are polarized, they're not exactly aligned perfectly, and there's always a little bit of the previous evidence there. But this company didn't actually have the technology, the capability to get it back, and they're very, very well-known, reputable company. So that one failed. We then took the next step, which was to take the disks of the machine that had been reformatted, but had not been written to. And we sent that to the company to see whether they could get it back. No, they couldn't do that either. And we did happen to find that we had, through a mistake in procedures, a backup tape that we didn't realize we had. It had the evidence on it, so we were lucky again. But the point is that there's a lot of claims about the methods that you can have and tools that are available to recover data, but they're really not there yet in the capabilities that we actually need and at the cost structure that we need. Even to do what we did, to attempt to do what we did, was a very, very expensive initiative in the thousands of pounds, not in the hundreds that we would have liked to have spent on it. So the point here is that these methods and tools are merely emerging. I think we can expect there to be many, many more of them in the future that will allow us to do some of the things that we would have liked to have done in this case, but that we couldn't actually do. The other problem is that you will notice that we made a catalog of errors on our side before we had to send these tapes off. But once we did realize we had made some mistakes and we were trying to recover from it, we had a clear plan. It's like we sent off first one of the backup tapes. And we had a clear chain of places where we thought there were remnants of this data. And we prioritized these in areas in priority of risk. We discussed with the company what the possibilities for recovery were in different arenas. So that's another thing that planning is extremely, extremely important. But we do know the one really big case in point in this is the case of the tapes recovered from the Challenger. Is that we do know if you have enough money and enough effort to put into it, you can recover material under the most harsh circumstances. So there is prospects for digital forensics into the future. But at the moment, one of my concerns is that there's a lack of theoretical approach to digital forensics, and most of the focus has been on methods and tools. And we don't really have theoretical framework in which we're operating. I noticed that we tried to put forward one today that's based on archival science, and I could engage in a massive debate with her about whether diplomatics and archival science is the foundation for it, or if our archival science doesn't really grow out of the scientific thinking of the 17th century scientific method, repeatability, verifiability, objectiveness, and all in the 17th century was so hotly debated among a whole range of disciplines that arose then in critical analysis, but I'll leave that for another day. I certainly think that it has prospect. So one of the key things here is that debate is going to rage as to what exactly computer forensics is. In the legal domain, it's about establishing reliability, authenticity, and recovery of evidence that you have recovered, and making it possible for you to present that evidence in court in ways that allow you to build a case. But maybe it's going to be much softer in cultural heritage. Maybe it's going to be about getting enough evidence for us to do the storytelling I was talking about at the start, about being able to tell really good stories. And at that point, I suspect there are requirements for the detail, the precision of evidence, the verisimilitude of the evidence is going to be much lower than it will be in a legal environment. So my three questions based upon what Matthew left us with was that I'd like us to go along and pick up with China's earlier point that we need another context that we really need to ensure that when we're conceiving systems that we do so with longevity in mind, and as a result of that, the digital forensics is a discipline of failure. In other words, it reflects our failure to do with our cultural heritage what we should do, which is to protect it, and it is a tool to allow us to compensate for our failure. So I think it is digital forensics, a discipline of failure. The second thing, and I think this is a more important one, and it comes out of, I got a grant from, after we did that digital archaeology report, I got a grant from Glasgow University, a very substantial one actually, for £50,000 to start a course in computer forensics. And I'm really glad that Brad Glisson, who's just completed his PhD in computer science, came to have me and filled up of creating a program there. It was quite a great achievement. But one of the great concerns that I had at the time I asked the question, and I suspect it's a concern that Brad still has, is that while we can identify the things that we would like to teach our students, for example, how to handle evidence, how to extract information, how to present it, and so forth, the one thing that we really haven't been able to do, and that we must do if we're a discipline, is we have to define a research agenda. What is it that is unique about a research agenda in digital forensics, in computer forensics, that is distinct from any other discipline that it might fall, that these problems might fall under, like engineering, for instance? What is our research agenda going to be? And so, second question is, can we define a research agenda, and what will that research agenda look like? And the third thing is, what will our theoretical framework be? And can we construct a theoretical framework that is broad enough and not constrained just by the cultural heritage sector, but is broad enough to allow us to answer those questions about digital objects that allow us not to take a soft side in the cultural heritage when we're talking about them, but give us this